Dr. Byrne, Dr. Byrne is a research associate professor at the University of Miami in the Department of Epidemiology and Public Health. Her research interests focus on patient decision-making. Currently, her research includes studies of decision-making in lung cancer screening and the effect of screening, including the psychological and quality of life effect of being screened. The other main area of decision-making research that Dr. Byrne is undertaking concern decisions about participation in cancer clinical trial, and we're really, I mean, every time we do any study, we need to look at the dollar sign next to it. We're in economic crunch, and I think Dr. Byrne is going to tell us about the cost assessment of diabetic retinopathy screening in the community setting.
So thank you very much, and one of the beauties of going last, unlike going first, is, you know, I don't get to sit back and relax, but at least I get to benefit from everyone talking about the INSIGHT study ahead of me, so I can skip over at least some of my slides. So this is one of the side studies done at the Miami site on piggybacking on the INSIGHT study. So I have no disclosures to disclose, acknowledge the funding from the CDC, of course. So as an introduction, you've already been told all about diabetes and the many barriers to vision screening, and that the INSIGHT study works to assess factors related to vision screening. The INSIGHT study has, of course, individual projects associated with each of the individual sites. And so this one at the Miami site looked to assess the costs associated with the community-based screening. So in this study, we wanted to look at the cost associated with the screening study and also the cost effectiveness. And as I'll get into, the effectiveness was assessed in a very limited way in terms of the number of people screened and also the number of referrals. So, of course, you know, there's in this study, there is no cost screening was offered at a federally qualified community center. This was in a low socioeconomic area in the Miami-Dade County. Participants were recruited from the patient population. There were referrals from the community providers, and also flyers distributed at community organizations, at community health fairs, and also at housing projects. So participant eligibility, they had to be 18 years or older, self-reported having diabetes, and residents of Miami-Dade County. So all of the documents, informed consent and otherwise, so also all the research documents, were in English, Spanish, and Creole. So we were able to recruit basically most of the participants who wanted to be eligible in our study. So this could cover, you know, the majority of the population who spoke any of these languages. For my study, even though we just heard there were 608 participants, for mine I only had data for 607. I was missing the one and I couldn't find them. So the procedures, as in all the sites, we had semi-automatic, non-muriatic fundus photos, and for more information on that, I'll defer to any of the others because I'm an economist and not an ocular expert. And they were transmitted electronically to the Wills Eye Telemedicine Center for grading. The grading was based on National Health System, and again, I'll defer all questions about that. So the data that were collected that I can tell you about costs, we collected costs in two broad categories. They were startup costs, which included costs on clinical equipment, furniture, computers, things like that, all the things that you need for screening people, and also continuing costs, which included, the bulk of it was salaries for the people who did the screening, our staff people, space, the rental space that we had in the community center, and also, you know, supplies and the various other things. So for the personnel, the hours were tracked by the staff that we included, and they categorized the time that they spent into, you know, very finely detailed categories, and we tried to encourage them to categorize their time into these categories. And there is a typo there, I apologize. And so we wanted to encourage them to track into these categories so that we could see only non-research-related costs or time was included in our analysis. And this is important because if we wanted to roll out these programs into the community, we only want to include those costs that would really be, in those times, that would only be incurred in a community-based screening program, not the research-related time, because that would be the most fair comparison. So we really wanted to separate out the time and the expenses that are related only to the research. As I'll get into later, this is really difficult to do. So we had to do sensitivity analyses to try to separate out the time and the costs that are research-related. We want to keep those separate, but it's difficult. So anyway, with the cost calculation, we first calculated the total cost of the program, and then for the cost-effectiveness measures, we wanted to get the cost per participant screened, which is the total cost divided by the total number of participants, the cost per referral, and these are total referrals, so that gives us the cost-effectiveness per referral, and then the cost per urgent referral. And this is based on, you know, as we heard, for the most urgent types of referrals. Okay, then we did a variety of sensitivity analysis, and we did this because for the base analyses, we use very conservative estimates, and I'll talk about this further, and so I won't talk about it right now. So for the results, Dr. McGuinn actually went over a number of the results that I had in my slides, so we can go over this very, very briefly. So here I divided up for all of our participants, the 607, and all referrals, and then the urgent referrals, which are a subset of all referrals. They're not a different category. And so you've actually seen this for all of our participants already. You can see we have a majority of female. Unfortunately, you know, 14% of current smokers. Only around 20% actually have insurance. So that's, you know, majority Black and Hispanic. And the one thing that you might notice is that for the urgent referrals, the percentage who are Black is much higher than for overall and for referrals overall. It's up to 75% for the urgent referrals. So then with the last eye exams, you've already actually seen this data, and that doesn't actually change for the urgent referrals and for the referrals. So then this is for participants with no previous eye exam ever, and the percentage in each category who have had no previous eye exam. And so 15% of males in our population had never had a previous eye exam, 12% who didn't have insurance had no previous eye exam, et cetera. Okay, for screening results, then this is divided up again between overall and those who had never had an eye exam. You can see actually there's really not that much difference between those who had never had an eye exam before and our overall results in their screening results, which I'm not sure if that speaks to the question that came out earlier about how often we should be screening. Maybe it does, I'm not sure. Okay, so now getting to the cost, which is the main part of this talk. This is a breakdown of the total cost of the program. On the left, you can see these are the startup costs, and overall, the startup costs were about $29,000, broken down into the various equipment costs, and then the continuing costs. You can see staff time is the majority of our costs, as you would expect. And so overall, for the 15 months that we screened people, the total costs were about $85,000. So, to do the cost-effectiveness analysis, we had, as in all economic analyses, you have to make various assumptions. For example, the depreciation. With these startup costs and with the equipment, we have to decide, okay, how do we depreciate these capital costs? For the base assumption, I made the base assumption that, okay, the capital is all used up by the end of these 15 months, which, of course, is unrealistic. We still have this equipment. So for sensitivity analysis, I assume that the capital will last 3 years or 5 years, and we'll keep screening at the same rate. So in the projections that I show in the next couple of slides, you'll see how the cost per screening and cost per participant will change as we make these assumptions. With the personnel salaries, for the base model, I use the hourly wages that we actually had. But we can also assume that, well, maybe in Miami and with our with the people that we hired, because they had to speak Creole and Spanish, they might be more expensive, and they probably were more expensive, than people we could hire who didn't have to speak those languages. So we got wages off of Career Builder and off of the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and so we could use wages from those sources and see how that changed our models. And then also the staff time spent on research activities. For the base model, I used very conservative estimates on how much of their overall time was spent on research activities versus what they would actually be spending on it, if they weren't doing any research activities. So for sensitivity analysis, I took off 10%. And that, again, is just an assumption. It might be more, it might be probably not less, but it could be more. So it still is conservative. Okay, so to walk you through this complicated graph, and I'll go to more simple ones, but this is just to show you overall. The red, which is very small, is the cost per screened individual. The blue is cost per referral, and the green is cost per urgent referral. And so we'll go to slides that look at each of those individually. The first set is the base depreciation model, assuming that all of the equipment is used up after the 15 months. We threw out the camera after 15 months. And then 3-year and 5-year depreciation. At the bottom, you can see the first one, kind of circled, is the base model, all the base assumptions. And then the MA is assuming the certain, a different wage. OA is another certain wage. 10% is taking out some of the research activity and assuming we overestimated, et cetera. So let's look at it. This is just per screening, so it looks a little bit simpler. So you can see in the base model, it's about $150 per screening, which still is a lot for the base model, but that's very, very conservative estimate. And you can see with our more realistic, I think, estimates, it's down around less than 100. If we look at screening or cost per referral, and this is all referrals, our base model is a little bit over $600 per referral. And then with our varying assumptions, with the sensitivity analysis, it goes down to around 400. And then per urgent referral, the base model is around 3,800. But then again, with the various sensitivity analysis, it goes down to around 2,400. Okay, so conclusions, there's many patients with diabetes in our population are not receiving recommended screening. Over 60% had not had an eye exam in the last year. 10% had never had an eye exam. With our screening program, the staff costs were the largest cost, but we had expensive screeners because we had the limitations that they had to speak a lot of languages. Our startup costs were pretty small, and they'll decline over time because we still have the equipment. So with our base assumptions, those are the screening costs that we had. Kind of some comparable costs that I found in literature, and there's not much in literature that's comparable. Most cost papers that look at costs for screening programs use simulations. There's very few that actually use actual cost of program. So there's one that found $660, more or less, in England program per referral, per problem detected. So that's very similar to what we found. An Australian study found about $47 per screened individual, which is lower than ours, but they did use simulations. Some limitations, we don't know if all individuals kept their appointment because we weren't able to track everyone. Our study is a bit unique, but it does point up that community screening is needed for populations like ours. So I will end there. The next slides were the ones that I actually talked about, looking at what happens if we take away people who had been screened in the last year. And I'll take questions.
Questions? Yes. Shinji. Can you just speak loudly?
Societal perspective, kind of an overall societal perspective.
Yeah, know, one thing I would recommend is also look at the cost paid of the red market or other conditions identified, which may be helpful for us to use in future to compare with other scenarios.
So after you identify the case, the cost of treating it?
Yeah, the cost
sure.
of the cost you pay for to screen, so each case of
so we
isn't
we,
that what you
well we
so
we
when
we,
you refer it's not necessarily confirm that they have to be disconnected.
So we this is the cost of it's the cost of the screening program itself. It's not the cost once they go and get treated. I'm not quite sure I'm understanding.
I guess my question is if you look at the cost effectiveness, when you compare it more the
Yeah, this is the cost of identifying the need for referral. So we're assuming that it's identifying the disease. But if, maybe let's talk.
Projected what the cost might be for a full examination contrast to a screening.
Byron Lamb, who's one of the co-investigators, estimated that a full exam would be $600. He sent me an email, something like that.
Per person. Versus
complicated. Yes, but for screening, but for referral was, you know, around 600. Yeah. But I'm not sure if when he sent that, if that was a physician charge or including the whole facility charge as well. So it's very difficult to estimate from kind of a societal perspective what, you know, a clinic visit is worth, because you can get, say, what the Medicare charge is or what the physician charge is, but estimating what the real charge is, I mean, it's a great question, and we should do that to get a comparison.
Yeah, also for the statistics, you may also want to include the patients as well.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that as well. I appreciate these studies.
Mm-hmm.
It's very integral into the implementation piece, right? So
absolutely.
So I just had a couple of questions.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the fundus reading, do you know, was there a discount for this particular study, and are those fundus reading rates comparable to what might be charged in, like, the
in a real world setting?
It's an excellent question.
Yeah.
We gave a
yes, it was discounted.
$6 for reading rates, which is normally at least $25.
Yeah, it was so discounted.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it internationally, the rates really vary. There are some programs that are fairly automated that catch the majority of disease and can outsource those. I know there are places with reading centers in India and other places that have the software that can do it for a very low rate. So I think what you consider a real world, I think the rate that was used here is pretty real world. There's quite a wide range in what you can get. So
it depends on where you do it, how many your numbers are. We chose to do it internally because it was faster than outsourcing it to India and getting it all compliant.
It also depends on what you're looking for, retinopathy versus, you know, diabetic retinopathy versus extensive retinopathy versus other lesions, and the prevalence of other types of lesions, because those usually have to be non-automated and actually reviewed by a trained reviewer or a physician. So if you have a really high prevalence in your population of non-standard findings, then you're going to have your cost of coverage be higher, and you have to actually have humans reading it.
Thank you.
Do you have another question?
Was discounting incorporated into the analysis?
No, I didn't do discounting. Since it was really, it wasn't kind of projecting future costs, it was just a static cost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but if we were looking at any kind of effectiveness measures that would take into account future outcomes, we
Any other question?
I just want to comment on the follow-up because I didn't hear the jury's talking. We did call all the patients that were examined, and at 2 months, I think.
Yeah, that's an hour.
Right, 2 to 3 months, we did call everyone. So we know who was following up.
For the second
Kept. Yeah. I think we really care about who
who's actually going
to get something. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. We would want to change our measure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. But just one of the takeaways here is that our costs are still too high.
Yeah.
You know,
and there's reasons.
And that was, is there any comparison to other screening, you know, this kind of study to other screening, like, you know, other health condition screening? Is that comparable? Is it cheaper? Is it more expensive to the most well-taken screening by, you know, by Medicare or by, you know, any?
So to make it comparable, we'd have to take it to the next level and see how many people follow up and then kind of calculate what are the, say, quality-adjusted life years saved per screening, and so do the cost
to,
per quality adjusted,
to be able to
and so that'll be kind of a next follow-on study, and then you go to the standard, okay, is it less than
$50,000,
We won't go there.
I know.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
And we can do that. Where would we have to lower it?
Right.
And we did have, I think, in our clinic, you know, times when people were sitting there and not screening people, so we could have one person rather than two.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Thank you. Ah, David,
I
you
still
have.
I just wanted to comment that the big elephant in the room for all this, of course, is, you know, we don't have reimbursement policy place
for this,
to scale this up, and so the policy people in the room really need to be working on that.
On that policy, yeah. I would like to thank all the presenters. I'm sorry, Anna. I would like to thank all the presenters and all the audience who came to this session. Thank you so much.